Chapter 15 Daisy was allowed to keep the goat, of course. Aunt Celia averred that it had been sent by Providence in Daisy's darkest hour of need, tying it in with the ancient mariner in some incomprehensible way. She made what was, for her, a very long speech about it. "He is the phoenix who has risen from the ashes of Arioch," she crooned. "From henceforth he will be Daisy's guide and mentor. He will protect her from all ills, as the lion protected the gentle Una." This hopelessly mixed-up assessment of what was, to all other eyes, a particularly destructive member of a breed noted for its destructiveness, irritated everybody, and most of all Mr. Bagthorpe. "Protect hell!" he shouted. "That goat just damn near killed me, Celia. And the minute it gets itself together, it'll try killing again. Get it straight out of here. You owe me £70, Russell. You realize, don't you, that it'll probably kill your benighted daughter? You may, of course, think it cheap at the price." Daisy herself had no such misgivings, and was caressing her new pet non-stop. "What a picture!" sighed Aunt Celia, in no way, now that her first shock was overcome, alarmed by her offspring's new-found affinity. Grandma, in turn, became infuriated, not least because she was already experiencing powerful feelings of jealousy. She had expected Daisy to draw even closer to herself following the demise of Arioch, and now here she was, within the hour, showing every sign of becoming besotted with a goat. "Picture!" she snorted. "Are you deranged, Celia? The scene reminds me of nothing so much as Titania fondling Bottom with his ass's head. The child is bewitched. She has become possessed. Look at the creature's evil yellow eyes." "They isn't evil," Daisy now squeaked, having come to sufficiently to overhear this speech. "Don't you say that, Grandma Bag. They're all lovely and yellow, like bananas, like in the book, and I'm going to call him Billy Goat Gruff." "But Daisy," said Grandma, "what about little Tommy? Goats, I believe, particularly detest cats. What if the goat were to harm him?" "I don't care," Daisy answered. "I like Billy Goat Gruff best. You can have little Tommy. You keep him, Grandma Bag." The rest of the Bagthorpes paled at this offer. "Certainly I think you should keep the cat, Mother," Uncle Parker now smoothly interposed. "He was, after all, intended as an offering to yourself from Daisy." "You keep out of this," Mr. Bagthorpe told him tersely. Grandma, seeing her son's mounting fury, came to an instant decision. "Very well, Daisy dear," she replied. "I shall keep the kitten. He has, after all, been responding well to his training, and is by no means the milk-and-water creature he was on his arrival. Thank you, dear." "Now everybody's happy," said Daisy contentedly. "I got Billy Goat Gruff, and Grandma's got little Tommy." This was a totally inaccurate assessment of people's feelings. Nobody was happy, except perhaps the speaker herself. Quite apart from the prospect of now having to live out their lives alongside a malevolent and unpredictable Ginger Tom, the younger Bagthorpes were now coming to realize that if Daisy were to depart happily with her newly acquired pet, then Uncle Parker's planned inducement to rehabilitate her at the Knoll would no longer be necessary. The banquet, presumably, would be off. William, who felt this as keenly as anyone, took the unprecedented step of offering advice on child-rearing to his aunt and uncle. He tried to sound dispassionate and wise in doing so. "If I may be allowed to offer a word of warning," he said, "I really think it inadvisable to allow Daisy to have the goat. Daisy has a very symbolic mind, and the symbolism of a goat is not good, not for a young child." This was a fairly cunning ploy, Jack thought, given the stress Aunt Celia always placed on poetry and symbolism. It nevertheless failed. "The creature will have only that symbolism with which Daisy herself invests it," replied Aunt Celia obscurely. "She is her own myth-maker." "Oh, my God!" Mr. Bagthorpe exclaimed. "Look, are you getting that animal out of here, or aren't you? Any minute now it'll start trying to kill again. And what about that £70?" Here another argument set up. Uncle Parker declared that he had no intention of paying Mr. Bagthorpe the full price of the goat. "We are taking it off your hands, Henry," he told him. "You are scared out of your wits by it, and would probably pay money to rid yourself of it. I shall, however, take a fair view of the matter, and will give you half the sum you paid. I will, of course, wish to see the invoice." A real row now developed. Mr. Bagthorpe was yelling and blustering even more than usual, because he on no account wanted Uncle Parker to see the invoice, which was for only £50, plus a delivery charge of £3. He had anticipated that Uncle Parker would try to knock a tenner off what he himself had paid, and with what he had smugly imagined was true financial wizardry, had come swiftly up with a sum that would ensure that he would emerge from the deal in pocket. Everybody present, except Daisy, was on Uncle Parker's side, in that in nobody's view was £70 a realistic price for so unprepossessing an animal. The younger Bagthorpes kept shouting out their own estimates, ranging from 50 pence, William, to £50, Jack, who had believed his father's story about paying 70. The unexpected, however, the miraculous even, was always tending to happen in Bagthorpian lives, and so now did the seemingly impossible occur. Daisy, sufficiently aware of what was going on to realize that the future of her billy goat Gruff was at stake, put her own oar in. She came heavily down on the side of Mr. Bagthorpe. This made history. "Daddy, Daddy," she squealed, rushing toward him and tugging her goat after. "Give Uncle Bag that £70. Give it him. You're mean. You've got lots and lots of money, and I want my goat. I want him. Mummy, Mummy, make Daddy give it Uncle Bag." There followed a stunned silence. "There you are, Russell," said Mr. Bagthorpe at length. "Even Daisy acknowledges the animal's worth." It was a measure of his gratitude that this was the first time, so far as anyone could remember, Mr. Bagthorpe had been able to bring himself to allude to Daisy by name. It was Daisy's appeal to her mother, of course, that settled the matter. Aunt Celia turned imploringly toward her husband and laid a hand on his arm. "Russell, dearest," she murmured, "for my sake." The next minute, Uncle Parker was meekly fishing for his wallet, and the transaction had been made. It really was amazing, Jack thought, that Uncle Parker's Achilles heel should be Aunt Celia. One honestly would have thought he was made of sterner stuff. Mrs. Fosdyke made no secret of her own disgust when later describing the scene in the Fiddler's Arms. "That Mr. Parker's the only one of that whole bunch that's a proper gentleman," she told Madames Pye and Bates. "And what he was about marrying that half-baked wife of his, I'll never know. There he is, like putty in her hands. £70, I ask you. £70!" The others clucked disapprovingly over their stout. "And you never saw such a tussle as there was with that animal when it came. Saw it all, I did, from the window, and I swear to heaven I thought Mr. Bagthorpe would have got killed. Not that it wouldn't have served him right, but you don't expect goats to go round killing people. Nice headline that have made in the newspapers." Even Mrs. Fosdyke, moving as she did only on the periphery of the Bagthorpes' lives, was becoming sensitive about headlines. "Anyhow," she continued with satisfaction, "it'll make an even better headline when that goat kills that Daisy, which it will, sure as eggs. And at least their surname's Parker, and people won't go connecting it up with me. Unless I tell him." "What about that banquet, Glad?" inquired Mrs. Bates. "Off now, is it?" "On," returned Mrs. Fosdyke fatalistically. "On. Said they'd done all the bookings now, and of course all them children was clamoring terrible about the food. Then that Daisy said she wanted a party for that goat of hers, and that did it, of course. That poor Mr. Parker. However he came to be mixed up with that bunch of lunatics is—" "And what about that old woman in hospital?" asked Mrs. Pye, interrupting this all-too-familiar line of speculation. "Her that got us all tranquilized." "Don't ask me," begged Mrs. Fosdyke, nonetheless going on to reply. "They ain't told me anything, but I've got a 'orrible feeling she's getting better, and I've got a 'orrible feeling she's even madder. There's some of 'em been to visit her, Mr. Bagthorpe Senior as, and Mrs. Bagthorpe Junior, of course, and from what I can make out, she started believing in time all over again. Now, what do you make of that?'